Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, we talk with Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. about the mayoral election in Chicago and will black folks turn out to vote? Also, what happened to the national black agenda presented to President Barack Obama? Cornell Brooks from the NAACP and Melanie Campbell from the Black Women's Roundtable are here to tell us. Also, Director Malcolm Lee, of course, Best Man Holiday, talks about his partnership with McDonald's to mentor aspiring black filmmakers. And our comedians are here, ready to bring the funk. All that and more coming up right now on News One Now. It has been 32 years since Chicago elected a black mayor. Harold Washington was elected in 1983, and of course he passed away in office in 1987. Ever since then, the city has been run by only two people, and that is Richard Daley and Rahm Emanuel. Yet on April 7th, there is a runoff in the city. Rahm Emanuel will be running against Chuy Garcia, a commissioner there. But the question that we're asking, will black voters play the critical role? There are 700,000 African Americans registered to vote in Chicago, yet in the general election, less than 150,000 voted. What is being done to turn out African-American voters? How do we inspire black voters? Joining us right now is Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., founder of Rainbow Push. He is on the phone with us from New York. Also on the panel this morning, Stephanie Brown James, CEO and founding partner of Vested Strategies, and Paris Denard, GOP political and communications strategist. Reverend Jackson, thank you for being here. First off, black voters, if you look at the numbers, whether it's Chicago, whether it's Georgia, whether it's many other states, if white voters stay consistent, where you have significant black voters, we could very well be the determining factor who wins and who loses. How do you see what's happening right now in Chicago?
The largest single block in Chicago has 700,000 registered African Americans, 300,000 registered Latinos. When Harold did run, Harold said he could only win if he had a combination of a big black voter turnout and a 50-plus-1 Latino turnout. We got 80-plus-1% of their vote. Clearly, they stood with us, and we should stand with them. In the case of L.A. and Tom Bradley, or the case of Wellington Webb and Denver, or the case of President Barack Obama, we got the majority of the Latino vote. Now is an opportunity for us, in fact, to vote for this alliance.
Reverend, how do you deal with the African-Americans who say, oh, my goodness, if we elected a Hispanic mayor, he somehow is going to help them and not help us? The question I'm asking right now is, how is the incumbent, Rahm Emanuel, helping black folks right now?
Well, he helped us by closing 50 public schools, and that drove into 50 drug stores closed and 75 grocery stores closed. It drove us into no trauma units in the black community. And I say that Chuy is a progressive. He supported Harold Washington in the tough times in 83. He was a delegate of mine in 1988. He's a proven entity. So people this week, some significant endorsements. I led a group of ministers, Reverend DeVille, Pastor Waller of the National Baptist Convention, former Commissioner Steele, and Representative Mary Flowers. Yesterday, Emile Jones, you know, former President of the Senate, endorsed yesterday.
Reverend, I gotta ask you this here, because this has been bothering me, and I've been talking about accountability, and we're going to do so later in the show as well. But where are other national black civil rights leaders? If folks focus on turning out the vote in the presidential election, yet mayoral elections absolutely matter. Are you seeing individuals traveling to Chicago, or what is happening on the ground? Other organizations, are they doing get out the vote rallies? I'm not saying endorse Emanuel or Garcia, but are black civil rights organizations pushing pushing turnout in Chicago? And if not, what the hell's going on?
Well, I don't know, Roland. I think the real focus that we have put on is people on the ground who can turn on votes. For example, Danny Davis has endorsed Chuy Garcia. He was with Willie Wilson in the primary. About six other county commissioners are endorsing Chuy Garcia. So we see a steady rollout of people who, some who did not vote in the primary, who felt conflicted at that time, they are in fact going very public for Gus, and we think that we have momentum.
I want to go to Stephanie.
To me, the issue is, should we have a brilliant skyline, or should we have a lifeline? Should we have more jail houses or field houses? You know, our kids won the Jack Robinson National Championship without even a ball field to practice on, except one email created out there in Chatham.
Reverend, hold on a second. I want to go to Stephanie. And Stephanie, again, the issue that I have is that as African Americans, we can't be solely focused on national elections. Mm-hmm. These state elections, these city elections, all of these elections matter. And for me, I would think that national civil rights organizations will be driving people out to the polls and saying, we could make the difference, but to me, if you're not going to Chicago, mm-hmm. that, and you're not going to Detroit, you're not going to Atlanta, well, then what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I think that this election in Chicago shows us two trends that we're going to continue to see for elections to come. One is that African Americans are voting on the issues. They're not voting about the candidates. They're looking at the track records of candidates to see, what have you done for us lately? And so with Rahm Emanuel closing the schools, with him not forcefully being there to make sure that he is protecting really the educational interests of many students on the south and west side of Chicago, Black people are fed up, and we've seen it at the polls. You know, in 2011, he got 59% of the Black vote. This time he got 42, so I think that's a wake-up call. The second trend is that you're going to see more local organizations that take the lead in organizing people on the ground in their communities. Now, truthfully, if an organization that is a national civil rights group is already strong in their local community, they don't have to get ready. They should be staying ready.
No, I agree with that, but Paris, I do believe it's critically important, though, that national leaders also go there to highlight it because, again, major cities like Chicago, you're talking about millions of dollars. You're talking about a contract. You're talking about opportunities. And so I believe that's important for those voices to be there on the ground.
National organizations must be on the ground promoting not just this election, but all local elections.
Turnout,
because local elections have the most.
Reverend, one second.
Local elections have the most impact on specific communities. When it comes to everything that really touches home to our communities, it's those local elections that matter the most.
Reverend, I got to ask you this question before we go, because I got about 30 seconds before I go to break. And that is, I saw you in Selma this weekend, and the folks who were organizing locally, they're right now doing a Selma to Montgomery march. And when they're done with that, they're going to board buses to come to D.C. to be here March 25th. Should there be a national call to action, a rally on the U.S. Capitol while members of Congress are in town, and sending African Americans and others to every House member, to every Senate member? Should that be happening? Should civil rights organizations be planning that right now? Because it's one thing to hold news conferences talking about pass the Voting Rights Act, but boots on the ground have got to be there and putting people in their offices.
Well, the real issue now, Roland, is Selma to Shelby. That's a big deal. Let me say in Chicago quickly, President Obama has endorsed Rahm Emanuel. And so for many leaders, that has frozen them in their positions relative to him. But on the ground, we know Rahm Emanuel has not served us well. I mean, the president has a friendship with Rahm Emanuel, but Rahm Emanuel has not served us well. We have a reason to vote for Chuy Garcia and foster that Black-Brown coalition.
Okay. Wow. All right, Reverend Jackson, I got to go to a break. I certainly appreciate you joining us, and we'll keep watching what's happening there in the Windy City. Thanks a lot. Folks, coming up, whatever happened to the National Black Agenda set by civil rights leaders in 2013? Huge report put out. Is anything happening when it comes to that? I'm going to also ask them about a national call to action. How are we putting people on the ground to visit every member of the House, every member of the Senate, in order to pass the Voting Rights Act? So we'll talk about that on the show. Also, Director Malcolm Lee is ushering in the next generation of Black filmmakers. He will tell us how. Plus, our Wild and Out comedians, they are here, and we're going to have a little fun on Hump Day. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin. Or go to our News One Now Facebook page 9 minutes after the hour. News One Now on TV One.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.
Loretta Lynch's wait to become the first African-American female U.S. Attorney General may soon be over. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced yesterday that the Senate may vote on her nomination next week. Her nomination for Attorney General has been pending for 120 days, the longest in three decades. She is expected to be confirmed by a close vote. All right, let's come back to our panel. Stephanie Brown James, CEO and founding partner of Vested Strategies, Paris Denard, GOP political and communication strategist. And look who showed up. Oh. Angela Rye, principal and CEO at Impact Strategies. I want to go back to the point I was just making with Reverend Jackson. And that is, I understand the role of civil rights organizations and others when it comes to coming together, having conferences, symposiums, workshops, meetings, joint news conferences, and things along those lines. I just simply think that when we're talking about legislation, when we're talking about getting things passed, you have to have members hear from the people. And I believe it has to be organized. Mm-hmm. I believe that if you're talking about, when I'm talking about this national call to action on the nation's capital, specifically when it comes to the Voting Rights Act, that has to happen. Secondly, you also have to be organizing people where they are hitting local congressional offices. When that member goes back on Friday and Saturday, guess what? When they have an event in their district, they should be met by 100 or 200 or 300 people saying, why won't you support the Voting Rights Act? That, to me, that one, it's not happening. And if it is happening, I need somebody to show me the plan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, definitely. And, you know, the whole purpose of civil rights organizations and advocacy is to take your members to make sure that they are adequately trained to advocate for the issues that most concern them to people who have the power to create laws and legislation. And so we definitely need to see more of these organizations making sure that their local individuals are not just when it comes to, you know, a big event, a big rally coming to D.C. This needs to be an everyday scenario where people are continuously flooding their local district offices, that they're coming to D.C. to flood the halls of Congress. You see many other constituency groups who are constantly on Capitol Hill. We need to see that level of fervor from the black community.
Paris, here's the piece, okay? Fine. If you don't want to have one national call to action, fine. What you say is every 2 weeks we're going to drop 5,000 people on the Capitol till y'all pass this bill.
Right. And you have to have a specific strategy of action that is going to work. A lot of conservative groups, Republican groups, look at the NRA, a lot of the Tea Party organizations have been very effective in taking pages out of the old civil rights.
They drive a narrative.
Right. Driving the narrative and affecting the change because they take it to the politicians. They're in their district offices. They're flooding the phone lines. They're emailing. They're doing all the things necessary to affect change and letting them know, not just marching. Marching is fine, but what's the action behind it? And that's what has to happen.
Angela, you work with the Congressional Black Caucus as executive director, working with members directly on that point. And I get the sense that you have black members who would say, please, can y'all please drive this? I mean, we're trying to make this thing happen. But if all of a sudden they looked up and there were 25, 50, 100,000 people rallying on the U.S. Capitol steps and then invading the halls of Congress, meeting with every member, they would say, that's what we need to push this thing.
Yeah, I think that an agitation strategy is certainly needed. I was sitting here thinking while Stephanie was talking about the fact that so often when it comes to, you know, strategies for how to move legislative action, they're not consulting with people who understand the legislative process. Right. So I'm sitting here thinking about, I would never try to walk in Steph's shoes. I would ask Steph.
Well, I mean, like, first, here's the first thing. Mm-hmm. The bill that Sensenbrenner and Conyers are sponsoring, okay, is that actually a good bill? Has the CBC endorsed it? And then, okay, from that point, so tell the people, this is the bill that we are saying, when you go talk to somebody, say, refer to this particular bill right here. Again, I haven't seen it. I haven't gotten a single alert from a single civil rights organization on any of this that lays out to say, hey, Roland, can we come on and talk about it? Here's our strategy.
So
here's our plan. Finish your point, then, Stephanie.
So a couple things. One is, and I think you know this, but last Congress, when they introduced the Voting Rights Amendments Act, which was supposed to fix the broken Section 4, according to the Supreme Court, right? They, many civil rights advocates said the bill wasn't strong enough. So what was supposed to happen this year? After Selma, there was supposed to be this mass push to ensure that this Voting Rights Amendments Act, this Congress, would be much stronger. I haven't seen or heard anything. All that I've seen and heard from Selma, amazing speech by the president. Mm-hmm. It's not his job to push a measure. And I think that at this
point. But they can't get behind one, though.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that it's not his responsibility to support a measure. I'm saying that he's not a legislator. And if the civil rights community sees that there is an opening here, and I don't know of a better one, but, you know, Selma, the movie came out this year, the march just happened.
Right.
Like, this is the perfect time. Where is the bill?
But let me say this. 2 weeks ago, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated had Delta Days on the nation's capital, where over 1,000 Soros from across the country came with an agenda to Capitol Hill, to their members' offices, to say, look, this is our agenda. So it's not just the civil rights organizations. You need these civic organizations.
Oh, no, absolutely.
So I'm glad that some folks are taking action there.
And look, when I've talked to all Divine Nine members and I participated in Delta Days in the past, I said, look, it makes no sense for black organizations to come to the nation's capital to have meetings and you don't drop folks on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. But again, you can't have Deltas going to the Capitol Hill without saying, this is the bill.
Yeah.
It's HR, whatever the number is,
right.
And this is what we're all getting behind, because it's easy to say, hey, you need to pass a voting rights bill. Well, you're absolutely right. You know, mm-hmm. I sort of agree with you. And we saw in Selma, when all Republicans were asked about it, what did Senator Jeff Sessions say? Oh, actually, I haven't read it. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And that was the whole deal. And again, what I'm not seeing is I'm seeing joint news conferences. But what I'm saying is, you have to tell the
people out in front,
this is what we're doing.
You see people out in front with, well, I won't say no agenda, no strategic agenda. Yeah. The chairman of the committee said that he wasn't taking up voting rights this Congress. That should be a non-starter.
Right.
Where's the pressure on that? Why hasn't anybody
Where's the
about
pressure
that?
On him in his home district, wherever he goes,
yes.
in his office, calling,
yes.
emailing, writing? That has to be there. Yeah.
What I would hope also is that these civil rights organizations would look to the Republican Party to find those issues where they can come together and affect change on a bipartisan issue, whether it's Voting Rights Act reauthorization. You have people like Censor Better who have been long
That's
supporting
fair.
It. When you
he's not the chairman anymore.
Right, but you also have, you know, the criminal justice reform. There are other things that we can work on and come together and drive the home message, because you see in Chicago, black people are wanting to vote their issues and vote their interests, not just their party.
Well, speaking of that, coming up next, we're going to chat with the head of the NAACP, Cornell Brooks, and also Melanie Campbell from the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation about this. Maybe they have an agenda. If so, let's hear the plan. We'll also talk about the National Black Agenda that was presented to President Barack Obama. Where are we with that as well? So we'll get that update. Also on the show, Best Man Holiday Director Malcolm Lee joins us to discuss teaming up with McDonald's to mentor aspiring black filmmakers. Plus, we got our comedians in the house. Going to have a little fun on the show. You know we're going to talk about Angie Stone knocking out the front teeth of her daughter. That's the slap.
Horrible. That's sad.
You 30 years old. You 30 years old. You still at home with mama.
Uncle Roro.
Mama showed you who's boss. 20 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Nobody's teeth out, man.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Family and friends gathered to remember Senator Edward Brooke here in the nation's capital this week. Senator Brooke was the first African-American elected by popular vote to the United States Senate, serving from 1967 to 1979. He was a liberal member of the Republican Party from Massachusetts. Well, yesterday in Washington, Senator Brooke was remembered by members of Congress during a memorial service, and on Monday at Howard University, the Brothers of Alpha Phi Alpha also paid tribute to him in D.C., where the 29th General President, Milton C. Davis, had this to say about Brother Ed Brooke.
Man defends and redeems himself only by creating the future. The life vision of Brother Edward Brooke was one which always looked forward and beyond the present moment and circumstances. And his brilliant achievements in law and government were dedicated to a better future with equality for all.
All right, folks, again, Senator Edward Brooke being laid to rest yesterday at Arlington National Cemetery. All right, in August 2013, several groups came together to set a national black agenda. They included Mark Morial, the National Urban League, Reverend Al Sharpton, the National Action Network, also Melody Campbell, Black Women's Roundtable, and also Hillary Shelton, NAACP. They were the four conveners of this particular meeting. The plan they came out with is called the 21st Century Agenda for Jobs and Freedom, and lays out a 5-point plan for moving the black community forward. Joining me on the set right now is Melody Campbell, but also Cornell Brooks, President and CEO of the NAACP. So I want to cover several things here. What is the status of this agenda in terms of what has been accomplished, what has been achieved? Have any of these initiatives been achieved in terms of what Congress or the President can do?
First of all, the agenda was part of the release of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. And so a couple of key things I think that have happened and that we think feel in our advocacy, we presented that to congressional members, we presented it to the president. And I think some of the key things is really around executive actions and really pushing for the enforcement of the things that they can do through criminal justice reform, through the Department of Justice. Voting rights, we all know we had a hit when it came to the Supreme Court. So it's one of those things. I heard you talking a little bit about voting rights right before we came on. It's something that we really have to work hard on because of that Supreme Court case. The other areas that we really are pushing for when it comes to, we feel like with the executive branch, with My Brother's Keeper, that some of the things that we had that were part of what needed to happen around criminal justice reform or education, we had that influence on that. I think part of it for us was the fact that we brought the 60 groups together and we have some way to work on it. A lot of things we're not been able to push through from a congressional standpoint, but even on a state level, that agenda is helpful. We're working on minimum wage. We haven't been able to get the minimum wage bill passed on a federal level, but we are influencing it in states and in cities. So it has a life of its own, and I think it's a very good blueprint for us to continue to work around.
Cornell, these are broad topics. So achieve economic parity, promote equity and educational opportunity, protected defend voting rights, promote a healthier nation, achieve comprehensive justice system. But the reality is it also is important that underneath that very specific thing, so in terms of legislation, in terms of these things, you know, what can you say we achieved this is a success, this is a success for the public to go, okay, gotcha?
Three things. So when we look at the tragedy and urgency emanating from Ferguson, from Staten Island, from Cleveland, from Madison, in terms of criminal justice reform, here's what we've seen. Post-Ferguson, the passage of the Death in Custody Act, which allows us to get a count of how many black and brown people have died at the hands of people wearing blue. That's important. It's not a huge victory, but it's a very significant victory. Number two, the Justice Department issuing guidance with respect to racial profiling. Very important, because to the extent that the federal government sets a standard, sets the pace in terms of effective policing, it's not racialized policing. Key. Thirdly, when you look at the Department of Justice report issued for Ferguson, calling that police department into account. That police department was nothing less than a full service department of bias. Mm-hmm. That report does that. But where did that report come from? It came from a racial profiling law co-written by the NAACP in Missouri with the governor when he was attorney general. So these are three modest steps, but significant. Going forward, we need to pass the End Racial Profiling Act.
Okay.
Critically important.
Now, let me ask this question here, because I want to shift to, it's still a part of this.
Right.
What are your organizations doing locally in Chicago? Are you targeting a number of people's doors you're going to knock on, people you're going to visit, to turn black folks out for the April 7 runoff?
So the NAACP across the country is focused on not just registering people for our national elections, but for municipal elections, and focusing on that. We don't have a specific, as in the national office, a specific Chicago campaign, but we have our...
If you have a Chicago branch, what are they doing?
They're registering people to vote, and they're active, but in terms of the national office having a specific Chicago campaign, we don't have that.
Are you considering going to Chicago to encourage folks to get out to vote? Because again, you got 700,000 registered black folks. Black people could determine the next mayor of Chicago.
Absolutely.
Melody?
No, I don't. I do have a Black You Vote group there. I don't have that information about what they're doing for this show, because I didn't know we were going to be asking that question, but I can find that out for you and let you know exactly what we're going to be doing, because I don't really know right now.
Last thing, the whole point about Congress passing, dealing with Section 4. Mm-hmm. You have folks from Selma who plan on being here March 25th.
Right.
Is there a plan for a national call to action? Is there a plan to move people through the halls of Capitol Hill to meet with members of Congress? And if so, who's leading it and what's the plan?
Roland, answer the question, yes, yes, and yes. Mm-hmm. In Selma, the NAACP announced what we called America's Journey for Justice, which is a plan to engage in a series of direct actions from Selma, Alabama to Washington, D.C., 850 miles across Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, into D.C., focusing on not just direct actions, but educating people as to amending and strengthening the Voting Rights Act, the importance of voter registration, the importance of voting in local and municipal elections.
But will there be something in the nation's capital?
Absolutely.
When is
going
it?
The other thing that's going on is Rose Sanders and Hank Sanders and the folks who organized the Jubilee are also doing a caravan again.
Days. Right? They're going to be here March 25th.
The 25th. And then for us, for the Black Women's Roundtable, the 26th, we're going to be on Capitol Hill with our Black Women's Roundtable Day on Capitol Hill. We also, on April 22nd and 23rd, our young people are doing what they call a Day on Capitol Hill with Black Men and Boys.
Hold on 1 second. So again, for the audience listening.
And voting rights reform is part of that.
But here's the deal. There are people who are listening, there are people who are watching, who mm-hmm. might say, okay, I want to be a part of that. So March 25th, mm-hmm. you're going to have folks here.
Right.
Black Women's Roundtable, March 26th. NAACP, when?
So the NAACP has a campaign for in the spring in terms of America's Journey for Justice. But our North Carolina, certainly in North Carolina, Virginia, our state conferences are already engage in direct actions.
Well, what I'm saying is
going to Capitol Hill. Yes.
Right, and I'm saying when. It's because if somebody wants to say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to travel there to assist you with it, I need to know when this happened.
Yeah. Yes.
And who do I reach?
So if you go to our website, the NAACP website, you can certainly get any information you need, and certainly with our Washington Bureau.
The date you said a group of young folks are going to be in Capitol Hill?
April 22nd and 23rd. Of this month.
Okay, so if somebody wants more information, where do they go?
Tell them to just go to ncbcp.org. They can go to Black You Vote, Black Women's Roundtable, and contact us, and we will make sure they get the information. Also, we'll make sure they can get the information about what the caravan is doing from Alabama.
Real quick.
And quickly, Roland, we need to be clear here. This is a sustained campaign.
Right.
So, in other words, this is going to take more than a week, more than several months in order to have a strong bill. So our point being in terms of America's Journey for Justice is to have a sustained campaign, public education, direct actions going on month after month after month.
Gotcha. Cornell Melody, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much for being here. Coming up next, we'll chat with Director Malcolm Lee about mentoring the next generation of Black filmmakers right here on News One Now on TV One. Back in a moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Malcolm Lee, of course, he directed The Best Man, the sequel, The Best Man Holiday. We've had him on the show. He has partnered with McDonald's, the American Black Film Festival, to host a competition to mentor aspiring Black filmmakers. The focus of the competition is to support emerging artists and to provide opportunities for them in film and television. Of course, in this show, we've often talked about the lack of diversity in Hollywood. And so folks in liberal Hollywood are always coming up with excuses. But there's lots of talent out there. And so it's a matter of being able to use them. Malcolm Lee joins us right now via Skype. Malcolm, what up?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. You know what? So the Ralph Bunche Center out of UCLA released their report last week talking about the lack of diversity in Hollywood. The Writers Guild showed theirs as well. For pretty much showrunners are 94% white males and people who are directors and things along those lines. And we Hollywood loves talking about how liberal they are, but the bottom line is their numbers are atrocious. This effort here really is about connecting the next generation folks and give them a shot, give them, in essence, space into this industry that oftentimes doesn't even talk to us.
It's true. I mean, I'm very excited to be partnering with McDonald's and the American Black Film Festival to, you know, help aspiring filmmakers see their dreams come true. And as part of McDonald's Love and Video competition, and we're hoping that that filmmakers are going to be submitting their works in McDonald's effort to have their new slogan saying a little more loving can change a lot, and because you know loving is greater than hate, and there's a lot of hate that's spread out there, and if we can get filmmakers to show love, I think it's going to do a lot for them and for the world at large.
So what's this process here in terms of is there a certain length of film you're looking for?
Now these submissions got to be in between 90 seconds and 2 minutes. Now, I know a lot of people will say, wow. I know it's short, but you know what? There are, you know, things between shows called commercials that messages come out and that are very short, that are shorter than that. And a message can get through and a story can be told in that amount of time. So, you know, it is a challenge, but that's part of what, you know, it makes it great. And, you know, it will make the cream rise to the top. And the top three will be awarded and premiere their films at the American Black Film Festival, June 11th through the 14th. But people need to submit their films up until March 24th. So the deadline's coming soon.
All right, so March 24th, and so 90 seconds to 2 minutes. And you said it's going to premiere. What else do they get? Anything
else? The top winner will receive around $2,500 in film equipment. And that's, you know, a significant amount. Now, lots of people nowadays, especially the people who submitted films to the Sundance Film Festival this year, made films on their smartphones. So, you know, $2,500 is a significant amount of money that you can, you know, jumpstart your film career and have equipment and have something to shoot.
Well, and again, though, I think, first of all, you make a great point, I would love to pull it up in a second. I'm going to try to for our audience. I was on Apple's website, and they had this great film on there about these kids in California who literally made an entire movie with the iPad. I mean, a whole movie.
It can absolutely be done, and it is done. So, you know, there are new and innovative ways that young filmmakers are finding out to make movies. I mean, you know, more than when I was in my day. I mean, it was much easier. It's easier now than it was in my day. You know, when I was in film school at NYU, and everybody has to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's technology. Technology has changed the game.
That's right. It's absolutely, and it's in the hands of the people, in the hands of filmmakers. Now, I know it's going to be a lot of stuff that's not going to be so great, but, you know, the cream will rise to the top, as I said.
Malcolm, Chris Rock's piece in The Hollywood Reporter, where he said, look, Hollywood is white. Call it what it is. He made an interesting point. He said that he has specifically tried to help black comedians. He said, a funny white guy, he's going to get all kind of different shots. He said, but that black comedian may only get one shot. And so these sort of competitions really is about also showcase works. But let's say somebody not in the top three, you or someone else might see that work and say, you know what? I may want to keep my eye on this person.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always looking for new talent. You know, I think that it's, you know, we can't do it all ourselves. I'm going to do a certain type of movie. I'm going to do all kinds of movies, but there are other people who have other stories to tell. And, you know, there's a diversity within our community, you know, of what we want to say things about, what we want to comment on. So I think that we, you know, the more people that can be diverse in what we call black cinema, which is not really a genre, but you know, it is kind of a subgenre, and I think that, you know, it needs to be mainstream like it is now. I mean, look at it at not so much in film, but in television this year, it's just been crazy with, you know, with the success of Empire. You know, Lee Daniels had to start somewhere, and you know, the next Lee Daniels, the next Malcolm Lee is out there and ready to be mentored.
So tell
it
us,
needs to be encouraged. In fact,
so tell us where can folks get more information.
You can get all information at AmericanBlackFilmFestival.com. That's ABFF.com. And it's part of, and you also check out 365Black.com, which is McDonald's initiative as well.
Okay.
And you can submit all your things through ABFF.com. And the competition is, you know, coming up pretty quickly. So March 24th is the submission date, March 24th. And then it's going to be June 11th through the 14th in New York at the ABFF Film Festival.
All right. Malcolm Lee, man, always good to see you. Thanks a bunch. I really do think of your next film, there should be some kind of role for Ascot Wearing Brother.
You know what? Right. I'm going to work on that right now.
I'm telling you, you should do that.
I'm going to write that in.
That's right. I killed it in Beyond the Lights. Gina Prince Bythewood.
You
appreciate it. So, you know.
You did.
Hook a brother up.
You know what? I'm going to see what I can do.
Yeah, do that. You the director.
My
do
man.
Right, make it happen. All right, Malcolm. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it.
All right, folks, up next on News One Now, Michelle Shields, Red Grant, and Michelle Sometimes. That's her name, Sometimes.
Your
centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. New Orleans Pelicans power forward Anthony. I got one damn eyebrow, Davis. Dog, you have got to split that eyebrow. Jesus turns 22 years old. LaToya Luckett, my homegirl from Houston, she turns 34. And actor Terrence, I ain't slapped nobody this week, Howard, turns 46. All right, folks, on this day in history, 1789, African-American engineer Benjamin Banneker, along with Pierre L'Enfant?
L'Enfant.
L'Enfant?
L'Enfant. L'Enfant.
L'Enfant?
Yeah.
Began plans to design Washington, D.C. And in 1959. Y'all got to go with the bit. Damn, y'all got to go with the bit. People, they don't control them. Like, no, that's not it. Go with the bit. Go with the bit. Jesus. In 1959, Lorraine Hansberry's play A Raisin in the Sun, which will be shriveled up, becomes the first drama written by a black woman to open on Broadway. All right, it's Well About Wednesday. It's Hump Day. It's always good to see our comedians in the house. On deck, we have Michelet Sometimes. Is it Michelle something?
It's Michelle.
It's Michelle, because y'all black people get special with your damn name.
It is.
Okay, I don't know how Michelle, okay, what's up with, where does Sometimes come from?
Okay, I can't have a stage name.
It's a stage name.
It's Michelle Sometimes. I started comedy.
Are you Sometimes Michelle and Sometimes you Sybil? What's up with you?
I am Sometimes.
All right, I'm just checking.
Don't say my last name.
I'm just checking. All right, then. We also got Red Grant here. Red, how you doing?
Man, I'm lovely. I got a real name. They over here beefing about names,
right. Like Creflo Dollar up in here. Red got the little bow tie and everything.
Yeah, I told you I was gonna get fresh.
That's
when
the clip
you
on.
Yes.
Don't hate.
All right.
A hater.
And so we got Michelle Sometimes. Now we got Michelle Shields.
AKA
the Indie Mama.
The Indie Mama comic.
Hold on, I'm sorry. What you call it?
The Indie Mom.
I got the Indie part. What's that?
Michelle. Just like the Beatles.
Your name is Michelle. Your name is Michelle.
Your name is Michelle.
Stop.
Why are you hating, Roland?
Because that's what y'all black people do. Y'all just want to sit here and you want to throw accents in there.
Because we are fancy blacks.
No. That's your mama's in the hospital having y'all trying to be all.
I don't want no trouble.
They gonna think my baby French, so I'm gonna name her Michelle.
That's right.
At least they cute though.
It's coming instead of things like Michelet.
You know how it read
M-I-C-H-E-L-E with the accent Michelet. Yeah. Go on here.
What's happening, Roland?
I'm just chilling.
Good morning, Roland.
So what the indie mom? What you wearing?
I'm a gold digger.
Oh, okay.
Okay, see, you got nervous. That's what I want.
I understand it, but I'm like, well, you having your Tony Robbins moment going on right here?
What?
You got a line of shirts with Les Brown? I'm a gold digger. Yes,
that's my girl's group. No, seriously, I got a group of gold diggers.
I would have respected you more if you'd have kept the gold on it.
No, see, there you go. That's because your mind backward. Where we going today, Roland? Where we going?
What? No, I'm just asking. So I got to ask y'all a question. So Angie Stone, y'all pull up her mugshot. Yesterday, Angie Stone whooped her daughter's ass.
That was Diamond.
Wrong.
She whooped Diamond?
Angie Stone walked in the room, said, look, because my house, clean your damn room.
Okay.
Your kids walking around the house, around here butt naked, they ain't behaving themselves. Diamond Stone get an attitude with her mama. Next thing you know, a lamp finds his way in Diamond's mouth, knocked out a front teeth. Angie get charged with domestic assault. Here's the deal. Look, I ain't saying you should hit somebody, you should be somebody.
What are you saying? But I'm saying, you 30.
Ooh. 30, then you're
grown.
At home.
With kids. In your mama's house. No. Angie was tired of y'all being in her house.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
That's what it was.
Stinking up my room.
Okay. Come on, you gotta get
Michelle. Sometimes. Sometimes you gotta whoop that.
I got a teenager. He gets out of line. I punch him in the chest.
Stop.
Michelle, hold up.
You said I got a teenager. How old is he?
Don't dignify
14.
That.
14.
She's 30.
Plus 30. She 14 plus 16.
Yeah, she's 30.
But watch this. This take it.
Come on, Misha Lane.
This is a step further. She only 30 years away from getting AARP. This girl need her own crib. And the bottom line is this, Roland. When you 30, she probably smoked Newport, drink Pepsi. It's probably a lot going on at the house.
Yeah,
and Angie is tired of the cigarette butts. She said, look, you're going to get these Newports, you're going to get this hot Pepsi off the coffee table, and it turned into a beef.
Now, you know what Angie said? Look, I took this stuff from D'Angelo. I ain't having this
why
with you.
Why you have to put him in?
What? I'm sorry.
How does it feel? How does it feel?
You know what?
Ask the woman with her front teeth knocked out. How does it feel? Ask Diamond. How does it feel?
Oh.
Hold on. We're going to come back on News One Now in a second. We're talking about beating the hell out of kids.
I bet you won't talk no trash no more,
I bet you're going to put some clothes on them kids, too.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Hey, welcome back to the show where the host knew how to get the hell out of my parents' house when I was old.
How about that?
Yeah, we've been out our parents' house 17.
This is a true story. So I was out of college, had my job, and they had my car, so I came home. And my dad's sitting there tripping. He's all, you know, he's always protective and everything. So I was about to go out. He's like, no. I think it's a little late. And I'm going, no, it's a little late for you to be telling me I can't go out.
Oh,
I'm grown. No, because now when I was in college, you know, I didn't have a car, so I would drive one of their cars. But I had my own car. Mm-hmm. So I went back to the bedroom. I was packing. He came back, what you doing? I was like, I'm going home. Mm. I'm like, man, I respect. This your house.
Didn't that feel good?
Hold on. This your house. Mm-hmm. I got one.
That felt good, didn't
I have no, I'm telling me I can't.
See, that's the problem with kids now. They never want to leave your house. They want to stay. They will stay there till you put them
you
out.
You make it too nice, Red. I told you that.
Man, they love my house.
They love it. They love it. He got
the grown. I got nephews, nieces.
He got grown people.
Everybody. I'm like the lady that lived in the shoe.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to go to the cupboard. Ain't going to be nothing there. But the bottom line is this, though. I like having my own place. Because if I don't like what's happening at your crib, I packs up and I leave. I'm right there with you. I'm
yeah, no, seriously. Look, I love
this house. You got to follow the rules.
Look, I love my parents. But when he was, I said, hold up. It's late.
Late?
I'm grown. I'm trying to figure. And then, now, here's a guy my dad once told me. He's like, look. We were about 15, 16, my brother. He's like, look. When you get grown, well, you're paying all your bills.
Mm.
You know, and your health insurance.
You can decide what you want to do. I was like, all right. So they came to my house. This is when I was living in Arlington, Texas. And my dad wanted to remark about something in the house. I was like, hey.
I pay all the bills.
No, I ain't say that. I went, hey.
You gave him the wide eye? You gave him the wide eye?
Okay. Y'all need to see the look.
He gave him the wide eye. That's the wide eye. Hey, Rose. And
that look means I pay
everything. Hey, Rose.
This is my dad. My dad went. Yeah, son, you right.
Look,
I was like,
the translation,
hell up, back.
The translation is a wide eye. That's what Angie should have did to her daughter. She should have just gave it a wide eye.
No, she gave it a wide eye probably 3 months ago, but them kids are walking around butt naked in the house.
How you know the kids was naked?
Because it's in the story. Angie,
why is that a part of
the daughter?
Why we
daughter
naked?
Told the police.
They're not naked. They
the daughter
naked.
Told the police. The daughter told the police. She came in. She said, look, I'm tired of these kids walking around here half naked. They can't control themselves. They make all this doggone noise. Your room is
you
dirty.
You got too many degrees to say naked. I'm tired of it. I want you
what?
To say that they were naked.
No, hell no. See, that's your problem right there. Because, see, I'm real black.
I know
see,
you're
I'm black.
Degrees,
no,
though.
I'm black. Every black person like, I went rolling. Kid was naked. They were naked.
You can't
see,
say that
no,
White
see,
House
when you.
You can't say naked.
No, when you say, well, I was looking in the mirror myself, and I was looking at myself, I was naked.
Right.
No, hell no. When they run around,
I bet you they were naked.
Them kids were naked.
I bet you
any KKID naked.
I bet you one thing though, when she knocked her teeth out,
right.
And she saw her teeth on the floor, everything changed.
Everything right, changed.
She cleaned that damn room.
And they said she went and got Angie out the police station.
Yeah, cause mama gotta pay for her dental bill. She ain't paying for nothing. All right, Michelle Red, Misha Lay, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Tomorrow News One Now is What the Hell Thursday. What the hell are all these people in their names naked?
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.